comes the sun and I say it's all right. It's a little bit after 4 p.m. here on KDNK, and you are tuned to a little half-hour news segment with the Soper Sun called Everything Under the Sun. Today, hopefully, if I got this right, I've got with me on the phone Tracy Truelove from CDOT. Tracy, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me all right, Will?
I can, and hopefully everybody else can, too. And Liza Mitchell from the Roaring Fork Conservancy.
Hi there. Great to be here.
And you can adjust that if you need that to be a little closer to you. We are, we're going to talk about snow. And it's unfortunate I don't have Justin Patrick, who wrote sort of the article on avalanche danger connected with the Avalanche Information Center, with me, because he's up having an excellent powder day. So that's the sort of the nature of the beast there. This is sort of a double-edged sword. And so let's start with, I guess, the scary stuff, Tracy. You've been up since the early hours of the morning dealing with avalanches on the highway.
And that's correct, Will. You know, I think the first call I got this morning was at 1:30 from my team that we had a natural avalanche that happened on Vail Pass in a particular area called the Narrows that we're very familiar with. It didn't bring down a lot of snow, but we were on our way up there today to do some mitigation anyway. So that's kind of kicked off our day.
And so, this obviously isn't the start of this adventure. How many avalanches has the interstate seen in the last couple of weeks here?
Well, I don't know. I haven't had time to put all that data together. But, you know, on Sunday is when we really, this last weekend, had a challenging day with a natural one that came down in a slide path near Copper Mountain. That slide path hasn't slid since 1983 to the highway. So let's just kick off with that day. That was the day that actually had, you know, some cars that got stuck in that slide path. And then, you know, you might have to help me because it's kind of becoming a blur. We're on Thursday. Was it Tuesday?
I feel like that was the day that I talked to Bill Kite, and he told me that he was trapped in between two avalanches in Dillon.
Yes.
So that tracks.
So Tuesday was the one that we had a big slide east of Eisenhower Tunnel in Herman's Gulch, the one that had us with closing the interstate for a better part of the day. And again, the challenge with that avalanche is that it damaged cable guardrail. You know, we just can't get ahead of it at this point right now.
So what is it? What's different here? And Liza, feel free to jump in if there's something you know about this. But it seems like I'm used to slides. I'm used to rocks. It happens. But this many, this close together, what's going on?
Liza, yeah. Do you want to jump in, Liza? Or, I mean, I can certainly share a little bit from the Colorado Avalanche Information Center folks.
Yeah, I can talk more about this later in our half hour, too. But I would attribute it largely to the moisture content of the snow. And we see that down here in the valleys where it's rain, not snow. I've got my big extra tough mud boots on today here. And that brings a lot more weight that sort of gets put on top of the other layers of snow, and it's just a lot more lubricated too when it's that moist.
That makes sense.
Yeah, Liza really sums that up perfectly. Not to mention what I should share, that the team I was working with today said that they had 20 inches new up there on the corridor, and that was from 8 o'clock till about 1:30 this morning, in a very short time span before that first natural slide hit. So I know Liza will get into it later. You know, it's tough to complain about this great snowfall, recognizing that could take us into a much better fire season than we were in last year. But it's also, again, a very challenging situation for motorists and travelers in Colorado.
Mm-hmm. So when I assigned Justin the story, I was actually first thinking about, you know, backcountry avalanches. That's something that we've seen some cost with recently here. We've had several fatalities around the state this year, kind of always do, but a few more than usual. This idea of, oh yeah, everybody, whether you're going into the backcountry or not, kind of at this point, has to be a little on guard for the fact that avalanches are an issue. Is that unusual for CDOT, or are you always, every spring, mitigating, worrying about situations like this?
You know, we're always prepared to mitigate, and we're always working really closely with those fantastic forecasters with the CAIC. You know, I think what happens is last year we didn't have a lot of snow and we didn't have a lot of mitigation. So people kind of get into that lull of not thinking about it. Well, this winter's been different. And so CDOT has specialty unit team members who are trained in avalanche mitigation. So those are my teams that are out there taking case charges with explosives to set off avalanches. Mm-hmm. They're the team that works the avalanchers and the howitzers. And of course, you know, we have a couple systems that are built in on Loveland Pass and Berthoud Pass. So we're always prepped for it, but we're not that many in numbers. So, you know, take that and add the number of slide paths, which I don't have that number on top of my head, that we mitigate across the state, and our team has been working around the clock.
Mm-hmm. Is I-70 getting hit particularly just because it's one of the main passes that's open this time of year, you know, Vail and Eisenhower, or is there something about that corridor that makes it more risky?
So I wish we had a meteorologist on the phone with us because, you know, they would really be able to tell us kind of how the patterns go through. But that is one of the partnerships I should also mention, is that we work really closely with National Weather Service on their forecasting of storms moving through. And that's how we also try to build out our resources for plows. You know, we kind of have to shift resources if we have more happening in an area and not so much happening somewhere else. Like, I just spent a couple days in Peonia on the water emergency down there. And, you know, they were just getting rain. But, you know, the rest of the state is definitely seeing a great deal in higher elevations of snowfall.
Tell us more about the water emergency, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, I don't mind. So I was asked to go out with the Southwest Incident Management Team, I believe that was last Thursday, to assist in the public information officer role for the town of Peonia. So they lost water out of their holding tanks. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you know much. Did you follow the story a little bit?
I didn't follow. I mean, I saw the initial story on it. I've been head down getting our paper out. So sometimes that actually makes me the least well-informed person about what's going on outside our town.
Exactly, and it's really just across the hill from us, right? So they had a real interesting water shortage situation on their hands, and man, that community came together and did what they could in a tough situation. But what they did, what the incident management team that I worked with offers, is support for things, you know, getting water ordered that could be handed out to their citizens, for helping provide public information and education out on their social media channels. That's kind of what the incident management team does, is support the town with resources they may not have. But I'll tell you the neatest thing about that event that they're actually coming out of now, which is great because they started recharging their lines and getting water back to people this last Monday, was all the young people. They had a civil air patrol group and young people from the high school helping, you know, get water delivered to people that were shut in or water to people that were at the town hall. So it's been a big water conversation for me and all of you for the last, you know, 2 weeks.
So on the subject of the North Fork Valley, the McClure Pass slide, are those sort of the same circumstances, just at a lower elevation with that big rock sitting in the off the side of 82 there, just outside of town, and all the slides we've seen that are not so snowy?
So now we're moving to rock slides a little bit. I'm trying to track with you here.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Are the rock slides a function of the same set of conditions, just at a lower altitude?
They are. What you're seeing with rock slides in the area, and obviously moving into spring, it's when we start to see a lot more, is what we talk about as the freeze-thaw cycle. You know, we're getting all this moisture. As Liza said, we have these really wet snowfalls. You get this moisture, you then get freezing, and that moisture gets behind these rocks, and it just starts popping them and breaking them apart. And so, yeah, 133 provided another challenge to us this week with some additional rock slide. And, you know, we're hearing about rocks. Well, you've got some right outside your door there in Highway 82 that happened while I was in Peonia. So it is that season, and folks are going to have to be hyper aware when they're driving. You know, the other thing I think I need to encourage folks is when it's raining like it is right now, we have standing water on the highway in places. So you really just have to slow down and take it easy when that kind of condition is happening.
So, yeah, where I was going to head next is what can we do to mitigate our risk here? You probably can't avoid an avalanche if it's coming, but you can maybe stay off the road if the risk is high, or what's the best approach or the best advice you can give folks?
Yeah, you know, the advice I would give is, you know, people have busy lives and they're trying to get places. And so it's really good to be as prepared ahead of time with information about what's happening with the forecast. Where, you know, if you're driving a car that is not well prepared for winter driving, that's a bad idea. You know, I wouldn't roll that dice because we recognize that when people go up on the corridor ill-prepared, that's the situation we run into is slide-offs or, you know, other challenging situations where people block the highway. We remind people to put things in your car like extra water, extra snacks, warmer clothes. It's just that time of year. And if you're going to let me go a little bit longer, I'm getting a lot of questions about what would I do if I was in my car in an avalanche.
Uh-huh.
And we want you to turn your car off. We want you to, if you have cell service, and we certainly hope you do wherever you are, to call 911 and let EMS know and let the professionals get to you. What we don't want you to do is get out of your car and start trying to dig out when we don't know if that slide path is done sliding.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's great advice, and I'm glad that people are hearing that because it's honestly, you know, not something that was really on my radar as a serious possibility in my life to get stuck in an avalanche on I-70, but I think people are considering that possibility now.
Well, and for us locals, Independence Pass will be really interesting this year because that's where I will often see we get the pass open because people really want us to get it open, and then we have these, you know, late spring slides that occur. And I remember one that happened a couple of years ago where people were out with their snowboards and shovels for the people that had them trying to, you know, shovel someone out of a slide. And again, my biggest concern is we don't know if that slide path is done sliding. So it's just better and safer to stay in your car, turn off the engine for as long as you can tolerate, you know, not being warm. But if it's on our interstates, we should be able to get help to you pretty quickly.
Okay, that's great to hear. What's, say you aren't necessarily in an immediate emergency situation, but you want to report that there's a big rock in the road, who do you call?
You know, I think a big rock in the road, you should go ahead and call 911, and they work very closely with our dispatch center out of Hanging Lake Tunnel. So, you know, either law enforcement's going to report or EMS is going to report or CDOT's going to be out there pretty quick. Because, again, we just, you know, we can't be too hypervigilant about the rocks that we're going to potentially see.
Okay. Anything else interesting going on with CDOT that you'd like to share?
Boy, if today wasn't interesting enough, I'm not sure what else to give you. But no, oh well, I do have one. In speaking about standing water on highways, and I'm not sure how much people are going to want to be thinking in this future tense, but we will have a paving project on Highway 82 from Glenwood to Carbondale this year. And I don't have a lot of detail yet about the start of that project. You know, we can't really start those paving projects until winter goes away. So we're, you know, still just in the planning process. But just know that it'd probably be good to come back for me to visit with you again when I can.
Sounds good. I look forward to hearing from you then. You're off the hook, Tracy. If you need to get off the line and get some rest or call some more journalists back, thank you for being with us.
Well, it looks like New York just reached out to me, so things must be ramping up again. So
okay.
I probably better take that call. But I appreciate being on. I love talking to the local audience. And Liza, I'm really glad you're here to take the conversation further.
So yeah, thanks so much,
thanks
Tracy.
A lot, Will.
All right. Thanks, Tracy.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. Liza, you're on. Well, first, I should let anybody who just turned in know that this is KDNK, commercial free since 1983. I'm Will with the Soper Sun, bringing you a little bit of local news. We're talking snow today. First, we were talking about avalanches, rock slides, the whole sort of mess on the interstate and around the state as we try to keep the roads open despite kind of a wet spring. And then we're transitioning. We got Liza Mitchell from the Roaring Fork Conservancy here to talk kind of about the positive of all of this, which is, I think, what we want to keep in mind, right?
Yes. It's nice to be able to put the positive spin on this all. But besides the powder skiing, of course, I haven't been up Valley recently, but I hear it's good.
Okay.
For the skiing. And it's really good for our environment right now. I mean, that's largely what we focus on here at Roaring Fork Conservancy is water quality, water quantity, riparian habitat. They're all really interconnected. And the past few days have provided a really interesting bump in our snowpack.
Yeah, you showed me this graph here, and obviously I can't show it on the radio, but it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that our water level has been above average, but not exceptionally so most of the year.
Yes.
Relative to last year, as Tracy said, it seems like magic. But
yeah, that's correct, and that's an interesting point because we are coming off of such a dry winter and dry summer that I think it's easy for people to think that this is, you know, the most epic winter we've had. But most of the winter, we were tracking right along with average. So.
But it looks like in the last few days, we're still not up to 2017 levels, but that's a big spike. That's a lot of snow and not
Correct.
A lot of time.
Yeah, so when we look at snowpack, we, as water professionals, generally talk about snow water equivalent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a measure of like the inches of water that's held within the snowpack. Snowpack is kind of like a sponge. It's just frozen water and air. So if you could instantaneously melt that snowpack, and what is the depth of the water that would result there.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a little bit different than sometimes how ski areas report it and they report base depth.
Sure.
But in the water world, we talk about snowpack and snow water equivalent. So again, that's sort of inches of water.
So this spike is partially because, as we've talked about earlier, it's such wet snow.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. So that we sort of bumped up above average in February, and we've been, you know, continuing on that rise just above average until the past couple days, and these storms have brought so much moisture, so much water content in that snow, that we, you know, when you're looking at this graph, it's a pretty steady increase. It's almost like a lopsided mountain, right? As winter progresses, snowpack slowly accumulates, and you're sort of walking up that hill, and then you get to usually around April 1st. We call that sort of the peak. And it looks on the graph just like the peak of a mountain, and then it drops off pretty quickly on the other side, because once you get snowmelt happening, it's sort of a feedback cycle, and it all melts out pretty quickly. So we are in early March, and usually we call the peak snow water equivalent is usually around April 1st. So we have maybe, you know, a month or so left of our snowpack accumulation season. So it's not over yet, and we saw this really sort of dramatic spike in the last couple of days. I gathered the data today for our weekly snowpack and river report that we publish in the Aspen Times and on our Facebook page, and try to get out into, you know, community members. You can sign up and get it delivered straight to your inbox if you really like geeking out on the river levels of the snowpack and all that. But the most interesting thing I saw today was that in the past 7 days, because we do it just once a week, we've saw an increase of about 3 inches of snow water equivalent, right? So that's like 3 inches of liquid water that got dropped on top of our existing snowpack. And that's sort of the weight thing that you can think about, like, why is this snow causing so many avalanches? That's a lot of weight that is getting dropped on top. And again, it's wet, it's lubricated, and it's ready to slide. So that sort of helps us understand the avalanche side of it, but then it's also really localized. So it was about 3 inches throughout the watershed, except up on Schofield Pass. And in the last 7 days, there's been an increase of 8 inches.
Wow.
Yes.
And that whole area around Marble was really low last year, right?
Correct.
They were kind of trailing.
Exactly, yeah. So the Crystal River was extremely low last year, and that was directly a result of having a light snowpack in sort of the headwaters of the Crystal River last year. So it's been, you know, a positive thing for us to see the snowpack all across the watershed, but especially in that McClure Pass, Schofield Pass region climb up, and we're seeing above average snowpack all across our area now.
So for folks who may have just come from a place where it mostly rains, why is this good? Why are we pleased when there's a lot of snow?
Great question, Will. We like snow not just for snow sports, excuse me, although that is a big driver of our local economy and a point that's not, you know, that is important to make, but it really is the source of all of our water. Snow is our water supply for drinking water, for irrigating agriculture, for everything that we use water for. It was really the source of all life. And about 80% of water in the entire western, sort of Intermountain West, comes in the form of snow. So without a big snowpack, we don't have water in our reservoirs. We don't have water in our rivers. And that's where we get into a situation. Last year, we saw unprecedented water restrictions from towns, municipalities, sort of all across the state. It was a pretty dire situation that led to a pretty serious wildfire season as well. So from a safety issue, from an environmental health issue, water is important. It's always going to be important here in the West. And so coming off a dry year like last year, we're really excited to see all this moisture come. And sure, it provides some safety concerns in the short term, but in the long term, it's going to really, really help us recover from last year.
Great. And my understanding is it's not a 1-to-1 ratio of we know how much water there is up there. We know how wet the spring will be. There's how fast it comes off. There's how much water sort of shortage from last year has, you know, how dry the ground is and how much of that water is going to just go to kind of wetting the whole system.
That's a great point. And like you said, it's not that all of the snow that we see is going to turn into water that we'll see right in our rivers. And so, again, it's easy to explain coming off of a dry year because the soil dried out in the fall. We didn't have a wet fall. So when the ground froze, it was dry. Soil conditions, and we actually have a local agency here, Aspen Global Change Institute, does do some soil moisture monitoring. So we have very localized data on that. And can see that if that soil is dry, that means when spring comes, a lot of the moisture in the snow is going to first go into re-wetting the soils.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be all the way, you know, from a couple inches below the surface to groundwater, aquifer recharge, everything that's depleted that we don't see subsurface. So we've got water that's going from the frozen state in its snow into the soil. And we might not see that right away in our streams. And then we also have the human component of reservoirs. And
mm-hmm.
so a lot of runoff may get, will go into filling reservoirs before we see that in our streams as well.
Sure. Especially the big ones like Lake Powell or like me.
Exactly.
I mean, I guess we'll see those after we see them in our streams, but it's still a factor for folks down. So let's take a little bit broader look. How are things look? I mean, is it just the Roaring Fork Valley that is celebrating, or is the West kind of looking up?
Yeah, great question. I'll touch on one other point, too, that you mentioned about filling other reservoirs, is that we do have two reservoirs on the eastern side of the mm-hmm. Continental Divide, which you might think at first are on the other side of Continental Divide. That's a different watershed, different water system than the Roaring Fork. However, there are many transbasin diversions in Colorado that take water from the western slope, where we get a lot of our snow, and you now know that's our water supply,
mm-hmm.
And take that through tunnels over to the eastern slope. So two of the five biggest transbasin diversions are in the Roaring Fork watershed, one out of the headwaters of the Roaring Fork and one out of the headwaters of the Frying Pan.
Mm-hmm.
And so those go over and fill Turquoise Lake and Twin Lakes. So that's another place that we may see some of our snowpack, if you will, actually end up going through those tunnels out of our watershed. So that's another place that that some of our moisture can go and not into our streams. But on the bigger picture, across the whole state of Colorado, the last month or so, we've seen incredible sort of rebound again from last year, particularly in the Southwest, the San Juan region that had a horrible year. They were experiencing pretty severe drought conditions throughout the 2017 water year, and they are now probably one of the wettest regions in Colorado in terms of our snowpack again. So it's always, it's nothing that any of us can control, but it's great to see that. And I know a lot of the folks down there and ecosystems down there are feeling a weight off their shoulders.
Sure. Nice to breathe a kind of a sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If folks, because we got about 2 minutes left here.
Great.
If folks want to learn more about Snowwater Equivalent, about the snowpack, what's their best outlet?
We do have the perfect opportunity for you coming up this Saturday, March 9th. Roaring Fork Conservancy has partnered for a long time with the Natural Resources Conservation Service. They're Derek Wiley is their hydrologist soil guy out of Glenwood Springs, very knowledgeable. And we've worked together on this a lot to provide an opportunity. We kind of call it a field trip for adults. Minors are welcome too, but although it is geared towards adults, so there's going to be a lot of talking. There's going to be snowshoeing. So we welcome anyone to come that's interested in learning about snowpack, about why it's important, and particularly get some hands-on experience. So we will actually be going to the McClure Pass Snowtell site. It's a place that we try to not let people, go normally because we want to keep human impact away from the scientific instruments. But we'll actually get to look inside of it and learn how it's collecting this data remotely that helps us understand our water supply. With seven different snowtell sites in the watershed, that's how we can start to understand what the future is going to look like. So it's a pretty neat opportunity to come It'll be casual. We're going to be meeting at the Marble Hub, who's partnering for the first time with us this year as well, providing tea, coffee, and refreshments. So it'll be kind of a cozy morning up in the hills talking about snowpack, and then we'll actually go out to the McClure Pass Snowtail site. With all this snow, snowshoes are going to be important. However, we do have some that folks can borrow, so that shouldn't be a deal breaker. If anyone's interested in doing that, they can go to our website, which is roaringfork.org, and /events is going to get you straight to our Snowtail site. And all the details are there.
Great. Anything else you'd like to add about sort of what we're looking at right now?
I don't think so. Keep yourself safe and just remember that all this crazy snow and moisture is a good thing in the big picture.
Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks everyone for tuning in. I think we got the inner game coming up next, unless I've got the wrong thing in my notes here. So stay tuned.
Great. Thank you.